Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge.
Welcome again to Howe's New York with real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight we're going to be looking back at some of the top real estate news stories from Brooklyn in this past week. So stay tuned for Bob.
Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home. The good old Brooklyn.
Hey, it's Howe's New York again, and as always, here is our host, Robert Howe.
Welcome, everyone, to Howe's New York. We're back, and I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Tierra del Fuego. Thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace, and we are doing a show tonight of real estate recap of things that happened in the news in real estate over the past couple weeks. And Jason, as always, has done a spectacular job collating, finding stories about real estate. And tonight he has done no less of a job bringing us stories all the way from California up and through our own New York State. So, Jason, why don't you tell us what you have in store for us this evening?
Great. Great to be back. And I love the intro. The intro, I think, rings true now more than ever. Now that nobody goes anywhere anymore, if we can reach those parts of the world that once would have seemed so exotic and interesting, but now anymore. So,
from our own living room or home offices, yeah, we are able to reach
a staycation.
Yes, it has been a long staycation. But we're back. That's the most important thing.
Yes, we are back. We are back, and we have a couple of stories from this past week in real estate news. And as always, as we did in the past, there's never a shortage of real estate news stories, especially here in New York. People can't get enough of them. They're ravenous for them. This one comes from Barron's. And as you mentioned in the intro, it talks about California in California and New York, and it looks like there's a pipeline that is migrating here from California to New York. It's very interesting to note that the story talks about how folks from California, especially from San Francisco and the Bay Area, are getting out and coming to live in New York. And you think that there's some similarities in there in the two places politically. Maybe the Californians are getting scared of the shift, you know, further and further and further to the left, and they want to come to someplace maybe they think is more centrist, New York City. So it's interesting, but there's a couple of factors in here that jumped out at me as reasons. What did you think of this story?
I was surprised to see it, honestly. I mean, I'm trying to visualize. I've never been to San Francisco except, you know, what we've seen on television and movies. Probably a mix of neighborhoods, much like New York City does have. Recently rocked with a lot of negative news about homelessness, electricity issues, gasoline prices. You know, when we hear a broadcast in New York City about gasoline prices, they say, oh, gasoline is now $4. But out there, it's $7 and $8. So even if you have a lot of money to spend, there's something about buying $8 gasoline that probably has you thinking about maybe we should be somewhere else. And I know San Francisco probably has pretty high home prices, as does New York, but probably you could save a few bucks, you know, moving from San Francisco to Brooklyn. Brooklyn was one of the places, actually, they mentioned specifically, and we'll talk about that in a moment, why. But you could probably save a few bucks, get a slightly larger property, not have all the craziness that's going on out there, although who knows what tomorrow brings, but a lot less drama, a bigger house, you save some money. You're still in a place, you know, when you say Brooklyn, we've had this conversation before on the show, Jason, where decades ago you'd say Brooklyn and the person would step back from you as if you were going to jump on them and beat them up.
It was a dirty word.
Now, Brooklyn is trendy. It shows that you know something about real estate investment, although I've been here since childhood. I don't know if I knew that much back then, except I stayed where I was. But it makes you seem a savvy investor in a very trendy area, and you are not going to lose any street credibility when you tell someone that you are from Glen. And so what do you think of the other I mean, there seem to be a lot of people coming from California, according to this Barron's article.
Yeah, when you talk about, you know, Brooklyn, you know, we covered that extensively about Brooklyn's brand recognition and the extra, I guess, gravitas you had if you were from Brooklyn. And it almost seems like anyone was born in Brooklyn. They do mention a couple of things that jumped out at me. The industry buzz terminology, the buzzwords of in-migration has declined in California. Out-migration is on the rise. And the whopping statistic that hit me when you say, well, how would you know? How do you know any of this? How do they know that people from California are coming to New York and to Brooklyn? Well, it points out that the searches on Zillow for those in San Francisco area looking for places in New York City and Brooklyn rose 171% from 2019 to 2021.
That is a lot.
So, I mean, that's a steep increase. And when you think of the things that they kind of allude to as well, you know, San Francisco maybe have some newly undesirable qualities about it. But one of those that share with New York is price, and the price of Manhattan, San Francisco is just through the roof. So why would they be coming here? You mentioned that they could save some money by living in the ultra chic and trendy Brooklyn, but getting a little bit more bang from their buck versus, say, San Francisco. But there are a couple other factors that that kind of grabbed me here about this. And one of them was something that we talked about quite a bit a few years ago on the show, and the number of times it popped up in our news recaps. Technology. New York has become a real technology hub, and we spoke about it then, about repurposing areas in Brooklyn to house tech startups. And New York is pretty much taken over from Silicon Valley in terms of how friendly it is to tech startups and tech businesses and the tech industry that's in downtown Brooklyn. And it seems like that is a real driving factor. Another one was one of the topics that we had on the first episode back, where we talked about cryptocurrency, and New York has brought in more cryptocurrency startups than any other place in the country. So those two really kind of stood out for me as maybe the connection to that area of the country and why they're coming here.
It is interesting to think of New York as being the new hub for technology, but, it is. We have, I think our spaces are better suited to smaller startups. You know, you don't need giant office buildings, sprawling campuses for a small startup. And maybe you'll never need a campus or anything of that size for technology, as all of these things are shrinking. If they could fit on your iPhone, I guess you don't have to have a whole campus full of stuff, to fill up your iPhone. And I just think people are still, they want to get away from the craziness in Seattle, with their political situations, the craziness in Silicon Valley. I think they're surrounded by forest fires every now and then. The craziness in San Francisco with homelessness and $8 gas prices. We still have, stability, some sort of stableness, in terms of real estate and industry and infrastructure. We're not running out. Our lights aren't going off because the sun didn't shine. We have plenty of electricity day and night, good weather and bad weather. So there are a lot of reasons, and plus you're saving money. You get, as you said, you're getting more, a larger property for less money. And it is trendy, and you're escaping craziness. So I think all those things are... are interesting factors drawing these people from the West Coast. But still, I am still surprised that many people are coming in this direction. But I guess this, if craziness is a factor, sooner or later craziness gets to you and you have to make a change, even if you didn't want to in the first place. And craziness could be one of the reasons driving everybody to the East Coast. But we'll have
give us, especially every cent. I don't know where they're going to put everybody, but it does also mention, it talks about something that has been the case all over, is the remote working. So if your company in San Francisco allows you to work remotely and you could live anywhere, you think, well, you know what, I could get most of my money in New York and live in Brooklyn and still keep my job and not have to upend my entire life. So there is some benefit to that. And then there's the housing prices. The market has not been as volatile here as it's been in other places, but, super, super increases. And, it seems to have been a little bit more stable. But an interesting story nonetheless, and something that I guess we'll have to see. If we see any Californians, maybe people walking around 3rd Avenue with surfboards, I guess they go to Hobra, but I don't know if they're going to be catching any waves. our next story comes from Brownstoner, and this one is very neighborhood specific, especially if you're of a certain age in Brooklyn, you know of, have been to, or remember Century 21. And, you know, the institution that was, that recently filed for bankruptcy in the past year or two during the pandemic, is now in the hands of a developer, and the demolition is imminent. So Century 21 is no more, and will be replaced by another one of those things which we talked about years ago, the influx of high-end brands. So it looks like some top retailers are going to be maybe occupying that pretty enormous space. I'd be interested to see what they're going to put there to fill up all that space that they occupied.
And that's beginning to be a new trend also, rather than, I mean, you still have the Targets and the Kohl's that are massive. You know, you could, you know, you were worn out after, you know, a shopping spree at one of those stores, the number of steps you take just to get around those stores. And I think retail is probably trying to find a balance between having a footprint somewhere, having a, you know, a real brick and mortar store, and yet doing a lot of stuff online. And maybe this will be one, you know, example of how they're, you know, treading, you know, those two trends. I guess you don't need, you know, thousands of square feet when in a couple hundreds of square feet you could have your product seen. And I guess, look, if you don't have it in stock, you tell the person it'll be delivered to your house tomorrow. There's not much, not a heck of a lot of difference. You don't have that instant gratification, but within one day you would have the instant gratification. So, and I am not sure that as big as Century is, any of the national retailers really would know how to one national retailer would probably not know how to deal with that kind of a space, you know, essentially squished in between other 20 by 100 foot stores on 86th Street. So it should be a pretty novel experiment, you know, having multiple stores in one, you know, big shape. But I hate to say that I'm old enough to remember the first store they had on 86th Street. It was just a 20 by 100. And you actually went in, and they had their merchandise still in boxes. You would open boxes and look through it and find your size. And, you know, it was all overruns and excesses that, you know, the Gindies bought. And you actually, they delivered it in boxes, and you look through boxes to get whatever you wanted. And from there, of course, it caught on and expanded to just about everything. But talk a little bit about how Bay Ridgeites have felt about Century 21 leaving that beloved space, Jason.
Well, it is an institution. It is something that, like I said, just about everybody in Bay Ridge has just been. I shopped there as a kid, and I shopped there as an adult. And I wonder if the pandemic being the final nail in its coffin maybe had a little bit to do with the bigger retailers, or the ones that were able to stay afloat and be successful were ones that also had online business. And I don't think Century 21 did ever graduated to that, or ever, you know, evolved into that space, but that could be a reason why they just couldn't stick around. And that space is unique, and if you've never been, or if anyone listening can picture it, it's on one city block that cuts through and extends to the next city block, and it had a property across the street from that where you went into that. I wonder if it's destined to be, it could be a, almost like a mini mall and bring in maybe some high-end brands to occupy, maybe, who knows, maybe a dozen could occupy and have small little pop-up locations within that space and maybe make it a, almost like a mall. But it is a massive, massive retail space that's been there since 1961. So it'll be a real change to see it no longer there, even though it hasn't been open. But just that its presence was there, you still had some nostalgia for it.
Yeah, I think so, it also, if you remember, it gobbled up a supermarket was there also.
Yeah.
The supermarket,
yeah.
I think, went from 86th to 87th, and
mm-hmm.
that
yeah.
kind of got gobbled up by Century 21. So there are a lot of
that
pieces.
That was their expansion.
Taking over the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
Although in if you've ever been in the Manhattan store, that also is a hodgepodge of escalators and stairs and landings and balconies and hallways and all sorts of stuff that they cobbled together. And maybe they saw the pandemic as a way to bow out, you know, gracefully. Although it is, people still mourn the passing of Century 21, and I know there's not a day I don't walk up 86th Street saying, boy, has this place changed, you know, with Century 21 leaving. But hopefully, smart retailers, smart developers will make that once again into an attractive urban shopping area that it was, only a few years ago. I mean, it does have tremendous foot traffic with the Staten Island
mm-hmm. yeah.
buses a block away, the subway
station. The transit,
station. Yeah,
the transit takes you right
yes.
there.
Exactly.
And the 286th Street mainstays from my childhood are now no more. Nathan's and Century 21. They both exist only in our memories now.
Nathan's is going to be a public school, and my memory of 86th Street was Young Fellows. It was a store for my mom would bring me to every Easter to buy my Easter suit, and it was actually facing Century 21. And the salesman, no matter what suit they put on me, he said, this looks wonderful on you. This really fits you beautifully. And I was thinking, are there any things that don't look good on me, any things that don't fit me? But that was back in the day where things haven't changed, yes. But Easter was a big thing, and you always had to have a new set of clothes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Young Fellows was the place. I once, when the Beatles were famous, my parents bought me, a Nehru jacket.
Nehru jacket.
That was the ones with the collars. And I always tell people that went out of fashion by the time I walked out of the store with that jacket on. But out there somewhere, someone is wearing my Nehru jacket. But not me. So what else do you have for us?
We've got a story from the Brooklyn Daily Eagle. Now, this was something that we touched on this week in one of our news updates on the website regarding Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce survey. I don't think it will surprise anyone to know. I mean, even though we are into the recovery from COVID or all around the country, it doesn't mean that things are back to normal. While they might be headed in that direction, it's still slow going in some places. And Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce did a survey and found out that a lot of small businesses in Brooklyn are being blunt about their slow recovery. 41% of businesses said there was an increase in year to year from 2020 to 2021. 72% of businesses said that they had lower sales during that time. and 68% of businesses say they lost customers, and almost half said that they have had employee issues because of labor shortage. So there's a lot of numbers trending in the wrong direction, according to the people that are in the trenches day in and day out in small business in Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, let me say one thing about the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce. They have done an amazing job throughout the COVID period of assisting small businesses. You know, you think of the Chamber of Commerce maybe representing the big guys, the big banks, the big realtors, the big insurers, the big hospitals. And, yes, there's a portion of that they do represent. But during the pandemic, they really morphed into a resource for the little guy who was even unable to get masks or gloves or didn't know how to apply for a COVID-style loan. And they really jumped into action and did, you know, a great job supporting, you know, small businesses. And kudos to them and their CEO, Randy Pierce, did a great job. But, you know, then as much help as they could provide, you know, for the small merchant, people's shopping habits, eating habits, going out habits have all changed. And, I call it, you know, we might call ourselves the shut-in generation, where we don't have to go out of the house. Amazon delivers to us all the articles we need. Uber brings our food. Netflix brings our entertainment. You can Zoom a gym class in your house, and you really don't have to go out of the house anymore. And I think that's something that we're going to have to come to grips with and getting, you know, part of it is, yeah, it was comfortable to stay home and do all that exercise in your house, eat in your house, watch movies in your house. But humans need to get out and experience other human beings, and it's going to take a while for that to come back. And then the idea of going out and being in a crowded restaurant, you know, that was pretty, you know, for a while you had to wear masks, you had to have tables 6 feet apart. That was really pretty depressing. You had to eat outside with cars whizzing by you in the middle of the street on cold, miserable nights. So gotten used to, you know, staying home a bit. Thankfully, you know, the government, I don't know where they got the money from, but we're not going to go there just yet, you know, did flood small businesses with money to keep them afloat. But it wasn't like the business that you would do while you were open without any pandemic, you know, related issues. And, you know, you touched on labor as an issue. And it was funny. I was talking to a business owner a couple of weeks ago, and the business owner said, you know, what is the most difficult employee to get? And I said, no, I can't imagine. I didn't know whether maybe it was a computer person or a person who had a trade, a plumber, electrician. He said a dishwasher. Nobody wants to be a dishwasher. Why? I don't know, but maybe, you know, they think they're better than a dishwasher. Maybe they're getting money in from other areas. You know, the government was giving out a lot of money there for a while, encouraging people to stay home. Maybe the people who were dishwashers went elsewhere in the country. But once I've put this in your mind, you will pass by many a restaurant, Jason, that says help wanted dishwasher.
I've seen
help
wanted
manager, bartender.
Yeah.
It says help wanted dishwasher. So of course, we've lost a lot of other people, too. Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And one of the things I noticed about when I saw that, it jumped out at me too, as I thought the same thing. What is it? This, then I thought, you know what? I guess when you're told repeatedly how dangerous it is out there, and that, oh, I mean, it is, like you said, we need to get back out, you know, and be out interacting, doing a lot of things that we always did, but it's going to take, for a number of people, a large part of that population, a reprogramming almost, to get, and some will never be okay with it, but it does seem to be a correlation between telling people how dangerous it is out there, and then those people out there saying, well, you know, if it's so dangerous, maybe it's not worth the dishwasher salary for me to risk my life, if they're telling me that my life is in jeopardy and that I shouldn't be out there and that we should be 6 feet apart and I'm in there washing dishes, you know, maybe those people kind of looked and reassessed and thought, it's not worth it. So that was my take on it. But as we come to our last story, this was one of those stories that we always used to like to end the news recap with, a just a fun, interesting story. These are the types of stories that I always call this real estate clickbait. You see these headlines, it's meant to grab your attention. The people that click on these just want to look at it and ooh and ah, because it is something to ooh and ah over. From the New York Post, and it's from about 2 weeks ago, which I believe is probably when the property went up for sale, because it's showing on the market as 18 days. It's a treasure-filled Brooklyn mansion from 1900 that came onto the market for what seems to be a reasonable $2.7 million, when you consider the gingerbread house. But when you see the property on the inside, boy, is it interesting, the history that's contained within these, to take it from the story, virtually untouched or revitalized or refurbished walls.
It is interesting. The exterior, of course, is magnificent. It's located in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Is there something else I can help with?
Which is a very trendy area nowadays. Although Bushwick is smack dab in the middle of Brooklyn, and the one knock I have against it is the only way you can get there is by the streets, and it does take a little bit of a while to get to the middle of Brooklyn by streets. But nonetheless, it's a very stately looking house, and you then wonder, well, what's the inside look like? But the inside, as you mentioned, is pretty much untouched from the original design. Mm-hmm. It's not as though the subsequent owners went in there and tore out existing woodwork or changed the windows. The windows are all, you know, that heavy old style stained glass with the lead, in the middle, and all the woodwork is still the original stuff. It is pretty, and as you pointed out, it is pretty much untouched. The foyer, the floor, or the landings on the stairwells are all this inlaid wood, which would have taken a lot of time to put together, and not even doable nowadays because of the workmanship and the craftsmanship that's required. But incredible looking house, and as you point out, 2.7, although to you and me it's chump change, but I think other people other than you and I could afford something like this without too much of a dent in our
I wouldn't be surprised if somebody on the West Coast in California gobbled this place up soon. It's got a spectacular little outside area, according to this, used to be a doctor's office used to be part of the property. And when you see the inside and the outside, it's got a real spectacular sunroom that's in there. when you see it, it's properties like that really kind of hit you like as only being possible in Brooklyn. Like it's got a, it almost seems to have a, it gives you a sense of like this is kind of what maybe old world, semi-gilded Brooklyn was like. It wasn't, you know, you weren't quite at the Prospect Park mansions, the ones that did kind of almost mirror or were smaller versions of the Central Park or the old Gilded Age, Gilded Era mansions in Manhattan. But it was kind of that next tier down. So it has like that quality of being only possible in parts of Brooklyn where a place like this could still exist and still be there and almost be, you know, untouched for 120 years. That only in Brooklyn could this, and it could just as easily be right next door to an empty lot that was demolished and had the same provenance up until last week, and that this place made it, but the next door neighbor didn't. So it just seems to be like that. This is a home and property. It seems like it could only exist in Brooklyn.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is, right, you point out the houses on either side, which is kind of hard to see from the photograph, but you would think that there would be a handful of stately mansions on that block, but this seems to be it. And you could also imagine that the owner of this, although, you know, it is kind of suitable for a doctor's office to have that little office off the side, but it could be, you know, someone who owned some sort of manufacturing plant, you know, maybe a mile away, a factory, and they produce some goods that probably back then was a staple, but then, you know, as things evolved, they no longer needed that product, and they probably closed, you know, the factory, but does remain. But it does have a beautiful cachet. It's only 2.7. It's juxtaposed against a story of Roseanne Barr, who's selling her California home, a smaller home, for $3.1 million. So I'm wondering if she, you know, she could make a few bucks on the swap by coming to Brooklyn. She has that Brooklyn mentality, too, so she'd fit right in.
Yeah.
But, you know, only time will tell. I hope you'll follow this story to see, you know, if Roseanne does come.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. It's still available, but it's only on the market for 2 weeks. And I guess if anyone does close on it, they know a good real estate attorney who can help them with that just by tuning in.
Absolutely. Yes. Always so available
with
to buy,
that, we,
buy a mansion.
With that, we're at the end of our news recap for this past week in real estate news in Brooklyn. And, Bob, why don't you take us out?
Well, this concludes tonight's radio program. Thank you, Jason, for the wonderful job you did in highlighting and capturing all the stories that made real estate news the last couple of weeks in Brooklyn. This is House New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.